Hi, I'm Glenn Harper, CPA and owner of Harper & Company, CPAs Plus, and partner in Sula Consulting. In each episode, my co-host Julie Smith, Harper & Company's practice manager and partner in Sula Consulting, and I will interview a different guest about their entrepreneurial journey. The podcast features interviews with business owners, aka entrepreneurs, who bring intriguing and entertaining clarity to the entire entrepreneurial journey, giving others confidence to build their business. Our goal is to provide actionable value to you, the entrepreneur, to help you do business or build a business. Every entrepreneur deserves to enjoy the journey. Learning from others offers valuable insight and inspiration. We want to provide insight on the why, the how, the shortcuts, and the value add that many entrepreneurs wish they would have had identified at the onset of their journey. Sit back and enjoy the journey. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Empowering Entrepreneurs Podcast. I'm Glenn Harper.
Julie Smith.
No coffee today, huh?
I know. They didn't have the order ahead, and you know I'm always running late, so.
Well, there you have it. We're stuck with drinking some water. Well, we've got a really treat today. We got a special guest all the way on the West Coast. I'm going to do a brief introduction here. Sina Wheeler, a hardcore nutritionist with a panache for fishing. Her passion to perfect techniques for handling fish, to providing education on the fish food group, to providing the fishing industry with a model of how to run a third-generation family fishing business. She took her education experience from Megacorp Continental Mills and founded Sina Sea. This entrepreneur found a niche to create the direct link between the fishies of Alaska. I put that in a purpose with a bad wording because I thought it was cool. The fishies of Alaska, the fishermen of Alaska, and the people who love to eat fish. She's almost manic on her passion to share the health benefits of fresh fish for the human body. Who wouldn't want to move to Alaska to put food science and technology to good use? We can all agree with is that when one cooks fresh fish properly, there's nothing like it in the world. Thanks, Sina, for being on a show.
Thanks so much, and I love the intro.
Whew, it took a little bit of effort to do that. I had to stalk you quite a bit.
But if you're looking for a new employee, I think he'd be there in a second to go to Alaska.
Oh my gosh.
So that's all he's talked about.
As soon as I saw, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be a fun show. And it's funny how people end up where they end up and do what they do. And the fun of this show and sharing with other entrepreneurs and people that listen is just, you know, what that journey's like, you know. And it, yeah, you know, we started off at, looks like you grew up on an island, Vashon Island in Washington, which is literally an island. There's no bridges. It's just ferries that go there, right?
That's right. You've done your research.
Yes. And I'm trying to figure.
But yes, my husband Rich and I both grew up on that small island. No ferries, but it's big enough for schools and all of that. We had, you know, one Dairy Queen. That's the, you know, one fast food place, that kind of thing. But my husband grew up only a few miles away. And so, yeah.
That's crazy.
So would like the big outing be on the weekends? Like you would go someplace else, or did you always stay on the island?
So there's ferries. And so there's ferries, and then the ferry, you go right to Seattle or right to Tacoma. So it's this really interesting upbringing because you live on the island, but you can get to Seattle quite easily. You know, the ferry, then SeaTac, the airport is right there. So you're away from it all, but you have access. So yes, it would be like when we would take my dad, you know, drop him off to go fishing, you know, you're already in town. You've already taken the ferry. So it'd be like, well, let's do some shopping and, you know, kind of make an outing of it before we head home.
That's crazy. And it's so close, Seattle. You could probably sit there and look at the Space Needle in your background and just see what's going on. But you're really not
almost
in the city, which is kind of,
right,
which is really, it was very intriguing to see that. So when you live there and all of a sudden, you know, at some point you're deciding that you're going to go, you know, your upbringing there, it's different, but it's not unlike everywhere else in the world, right? You're just doing what you do. You
right.
make do what you have.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you decide to go away to college, and how did you pick food, nutrition, and science?
Well, my upbringing, so my dad was a fisherman, my uncles were all fishermen, my grandpa was a fisherman, you know, multi-generational fishing family, and that's out of Ballard in Seattle, most of my family, besides us, you know, my extended family. And so definitely grew up around fishing boats and fish, and then my mom owned a health food store. And so we ate healthy. Just, it wasn't preached to us like, oh, you have to eat healthy, but it was just a way of life. And when you do eat healthy food, you feel good. And so when I went into college, I tried a few things. You know, at first I was going to be a pilot. I mean,
wow.
That's very different. luckily I tried it first. You know, I was actually flew a plane and I was like, oh yeah, this is not for me.
That's a bit different.
And so, you know, that's what college is about, kind of finding your way. And I took nutrition class and was like, this is just feels like something that I would go read on my own. I just found it so fascinating. And then kind of took a lot of the nutrition degree focus you towards an RD. So being in a hospital environment, and I did my internship. And again, some of the best things you learn are what you don't want to do. I did an internship in the hospital and was like, nope.
Don't want to be that guy.
Don't want to do that. So I took kind of a right turn and went into the, and really doubled down on the food science aspect of the nutrition and food science degree. So I liked the lab stuff, doing the food stuff. So I got my master's in food science at Oregon State. And in that process, I was, again, I'm just thinking about food and laboratory food science, which I actually love. It's so clear cut. It's like, you know, when you do this, something happens, you can taste the result, you know? And then when I was going into my master's program, it's like, you have to find the professor and you have to be accepted and all these things. And I'm perusing these professors, you know, kind of behind the eight ball a little bit. And this professor was, you know, food science in fisheries. And he's going, oh, I need somebody that, you know, is comfortable on a fishing boat. They're going to be studying fish. They can go and pour their own samples and be comfortable on the boat. And I just wrote one email. It's like, oh yeah, you know, my dad's a fisherman. I had been going up fishing with him in the summers in Alaska. We're in Washington State, but right. I'd been fishing in Alaska with him. I wrote one email and he was like, great, you're on. And we're going to pay for all your grad school. And I was like, oh, great.
The fishing, is it where you grew up on the island, like where everybody was putting out to sea, is that nearby and everybody was fishing year round, or was it just a seasonal thing?
It's seasonal. So we're in the Seattle area.
Yeah.
And so it's not that unheard of in the Seattle area. We have a large fleet of fishermen that fish in Alaska.
Okay.
So what they're going to do is on a bigger boat. So this is a longliner. We also do salmon and that's different.
Yep.
But for longliners, it's like five guys on a boat, smaller than the Deadliest Catch boats, but almost, you know, almost that big. So they take the boat down for the winter. They're going to do the repairs down in their own harbor, like in Seattle. And they work on the boat all winter long. Everybody does. All boats require maintenance all winter long. And then they take the boat up in the spring. So in those boats, it takes a week or 10 days to drive the boat up. They go very slow. And then the boat typically is going to stay up in Alaska fishing for the season. So spring, summer, slightly into the fall. And if they have a layup or they have a couple weeks off, they'll fly home and leave the boat for the season. And then the last trip of the year, they'll load up the boat. They'll usually fish their way down, load up the boat, and then take that last load down to Seattle and sell so they can sell and get Seattle prices. And then the boat's there for the winter.
So when you would say you go fishing with your dad, you're like going fishing for like months when you're
yes.
a kid.
So that's when awesome. I was high school and college, I would go, say right after school was out, I would fly up to Alaska and then take a couple trips with them and maybe time it. So I would take the boat down too. So I would do a few trips, several weeks, be out with them. Yeah. A little bit different than what people think of fishing with your dad, you know, no poles.
Right. Well, that's what I'm thinking. Like that's not a trip. That's an expedition basically. I mean, you stand on the boat the whole time, right? I mean, it's a,
oh yeah. You can't get off the boat. You can't see land the whole time. So it's really fascinating when you're out there in the night, you feel like you could be on the moon. I mean, you can't see anything. I learned all the radar and all the navigation. I would actually drive the boat at night. So one of my roles when I was just starting out was they'll rotate the guys. So everybody, there has to be somebody out watching the boat, even if it's just, you know, drifting in the ocean. And so they would rotate and be up at night. So everybody has to have a 1 hour shift. And so I would sometimes just do the night shift. And so I could be up steering the boat. My dad would put me on some course. Okay, drift for an hour. You know, you have a plotter. Drift mm-hmm. for an hour. And then in 1 hour exactly, start up the engines, find your way back to the point. So drive us back to the same point you were at, and then shut the engines off. And then you have to lay the boat. You have to turn the boat so that you're in the trough. So they only want to roll side to side because the guys are sleeping. Mm-hmm. And there's a door on one side of the boat on the starboard side. You don't have the wind coming in the door because that will wake everybody up. You got to turn the boat around so the wind isn't coming in right. So it was very interesting to do at night by yourself. And you're just kind of slowly moving the boat around.
So this is crazy cool because like I thought like somebody's going up in the crow's nest. You got a pirate flag hanging out there, but it's not like that, right? You're just but somebody. You got to stay awake all day and all night. So then you take turns. So you literally have a full day plus, right? Working
right.
on the boat.
So if I did that and I did the night shift, I would maybe sleep in and then go out on deck when I woke up. And then there's a deck rotation. So on deck, there's a whole rotation on a longline boat, you know, who's doing what, and they rotate around. Otherwise, I mean, you get carpal tunnel anyways, but these motions are very mm-hmm. repetitive. And so they'll like switch on every skate. So it's like when you're a full share guy or a person is when you can join the rotation. So you're not just doing the special jobs. You're not just cutting bait. You're in the rotation. Now you're taking a load off everybody. So that's when you're like a full share guy.
And when you say long line, this is when you're actually individually lines or you're doing nets or what? How are you fishing for this stuff?
So generally, a long line is how we fish for halibut and black cod, fish that is very deep. It's practically, they like to be on the shelf where it's going to go really, about to go really deep, actually. But it is, well, my dad, when we were fishing, my dad would say, it's about 3 space needles deep.
Oh my.
But it's very deep. There are deep water fish and it is one long line. And so they'll put in, it's like an anchor mm-hmm. that has a line up to a buoy. And then one long line along the bottom of the ocean, and it'll be several miles long. And every 3 feet is a gannion with a hook. And so long line is considered one of the sustainable preferred mm-hmm. methods because there's no dragging. It's very specific. You would think a hook would catch anything, but the exact hook size makes a really big difference. They can even like kind of get this size of fish or that size of fish based on the hook size. And then the bait, of course, but also they could go out and they go for black cod. And then another trip, they're going for halibut. Well, they're going to use the same gear, the same hooks. They might change the bait. They just change the depth and where they lay that line because they know where these fish are. So it's very specific.
The science of fishing is crazy for any type and species, whether you're fly fishing the pond. It is unbelievable, and I think to the point that I'm trying to get to this is the fact that, you know, being an entrepreneur or wanting to go into the family business, it's hard work. It is total commitment. It is long hours. It is a thankless job, and you're out there floating in the middle of the ocean like, people just can't even comprehend it. But that's how it feels like as a normal entrepreneur.
I just
right?
can't imagine my summers in college being on a boat for weeks on end with my dad fishing. Like I'm having a hard time just comprehending that in a nutshell. But I'm going to bring us back to, so you get this opportunity to get your master's degree. Is that mm-hmm. where we're at? And yeah. you get this because you know fishing. So walk us down, you know, this journey that you had while getting your master's with the fishing knowledge that you have while wanting to go into nutrition.
Yeah. So it's just one of those funny things. If, you know, now is so full circle. Now it's like, oh, of course I've got my master's degree studying fish. But at the time I was like, hey, I just want the degree. This worked out perfect because I feel comfortable doing this work and I enjoy doing the research. And it was funny because the research project I was doing was quantifying the omega-3s in albacore tuna. And they were saying, we want to be like Copper River salmon. They have great marketing. It's all about their omega-3s. That's what we want to be. Well, I didn't know later I would end up, you know, we sell Copper River salmon. So it's this whole full circle that like you don't know when you're doing it. But it worked out great. And then what I really wanted to do was work at a food company in a lab. And I did that for straight away out of that, I went to Continental Mills, where I worked for a national food company. We did brownies, pancakes, and nothing to do with fish. And we're putting the dry mix in the box, and we, you know, and I loved that too. I mean, I'm one of these people. I just love everything I'm doing. You know, mostly I end up doing too much and taking it all on, but you know, I love it all. That's like probably my biggest problem, but I really loved that job. And I was doing like the scientific equipment. I was doing statistical process control, you know, making sure that the brownies come out perfect. How do you test a brownie? You know, all brownies are good, but we would measure the brownies, all the measurements to make sure that it is right. And so I did that for 8 years until we were getting ready to have our third kid. And Rich is gone. He's gone 6 months out of the year. My husband is fishing.
Like, and he's so gone, gone for 6 months?
He's gone, gone fishing.
How do you get that
we'll
gig?
We'll try to do little visits right. Once a month. We tried to see each other, but he's mostly gone. Yeah.
Wow.
So did he do kind of what your dad did? Kind of mm-hmm. went in those footsteps? Did his, I know we're getting off track, but did his dad do that? And that's kind of how he got there? Or, because it's interesting that you guys both have kind right. of the same passion.
No, he, just like my dad, he's the son-in-law that came into the family business. So my dad was trained by my mom's dad, who is Norwegian and immigrated from Norway. So this Norwegian way was taught to my dad as the son-in-law. And then Rich, right around the time I was getting my master's and working on the food, Rich was breaking into our family business and broke into our boat. And so breaking in is the term, but, you know, was a greenhorn and learned the trade. So from that time on, he's been fishing, and he he fished on my dad's boat. And now we have our operation up in Alaska, but he long lines halibut, black cod, and he does salmon.
I bet, you know, by the time the third kid came around, I bet Rich is just like, man, this is really hard having all these kids, because he's, you know, home for 6 months trying to deal with that. So poor guy, I feel the stress for him.
He told me, oh, we should have more. I said, listen, our three kids is like six to me.
Literally. Well, you know, what's cool about this is like you have this practical, like hard work experience of in the trenches, you know, producing, you know, fish, making that happen. But at the same time, you got this thing in your head that you're like this geeked out scientist that wants to know how it all works. And then
right.
to get the opportunity to be able to go and get the scholarship to explore that fully, know that you got this in your hip pocket, you can go get your experience at the Megacorp. Then you're like, after a while, you're like, all right, I'm done with the science in this industry. I'd like to merge them together. And that's when you said, I'm going to start a company? Or how did you like decide?
Well, I don't know how she walked away from the brownie making, to be honest.
Well, she's fresh, still got people.
That was hard.
People there. She's got people.
Oh, that was hard. I mean, we would have like bread machines. They have, you know, a dozen bread machines. And in the mornings when they're doing the bread, they're testing bread, they have a dozen bread machines going. As you walk in, this like bread
heaven.
Making smell is wafting in, and you're just like, oh, am I in heaven?
Wow.
So that was super hard to leave. We built a cabin, very rural. And at that time it was like, okay, we're just going to raise our family and just kind of go back to roots. And we just lived very rurally. We had our third child. I was able to stay home. It was really amazing. So, you know, 4 years into that, I'm like thinking, okay, great. Now I'm doing a lot of home cooking. Our kids have allergies that I've discovered because I'm home and have a little more time. I'm doing a ton of home cooking from scratch and things like that. And we took a road trip. We're going to see my family for Thanksgiving. And Rich was fishing for salmon now, and he was on the marketing association board. So they're marketing for Copper River, right? And I'm just chirping away. You should do this. You should do that. You should market it like grass-fed beef. You should do this. You guys should do that. And Rich just finally looks at me and goes, you should. And I was like, what? And he's like, you should sell my fish. We are doing so many special things on the boat. Like, because of my, you know, experience at Oregon State, I was studying, you know, part of what I was studying was onboard handling techniques and how they correlate back to quality. So it's like, okay, you have to bleed the fish right away. You know, any flopping on the deck causes bruising, all of that stuff. So he's doing all of this special technique on the boat, but then his fish is going in with everybody else's when he sells it at the dock. So at that moment, he was like, you should sell my fish. You know, I take care of it better than anybody out there. Our fish is the best. Copper River is already the best on the planet. There's literally no better fish. And we know what we're doing. So why don't you sell it? And I was like, okay. And by the time we got to Thanksgiving, we arrived and we said, hey, we're starting a business. It's called Cena Sea.
The best. So here you are sitting in, you're sitting in Entiat, Washington, a thriving metropolis of 1,326 people, and you're living off the grid, and next thing you know, you're going to be a corporate raider and building the brand. That's awesome.
We decided to build an online business, and at that time, we had barely any internet. So we had satellite internet, which is, if anybody knows, when you know, it is just horrible to deal with. And, you know, you could do email or something light, but you could only do video, say download video or stream. You can, from 8 PM to 8 AM. So you can do stuff in the night. And so here we go. Rich leaves for Alaska. I've got three small kids and I'm like trying to figure out this whole internet business thing with my bad internet. And I took an online course and it was video. So it was like, all right, well, I have to get up at 6 a.m. and do my video course while I have this internet window. And it was one of those things where, you know, I think I did better because it was like, no, I have to get up at 6 a.m. and I have to do this video and get it done before the internet goes out. And it just so happens my kids are sleeping and things like that. And so it kind of forced me to just, well, you got to do what you got to do, you know?
How big is your company now? How many employees do you have?
And wait, I want to know what point you get really upset about having to do this internet from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. that you decide, hey, I'm going to go back on the grid and I'm going to make this easier for myself while I raise my kids.
About 4 years.
Oh my gosh, I would have made it four days.
See, discipline, it pays off. Discipline.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. About 4 years later, we moved down. It was like, okay, you know, let's really do this. And I'm going, oh my gosh, internet all day. I don't even know what I'm going to be like, wow, I don't have to go, you know, go drive an hour, literally an hour to the Starbucks to do something.
That's crazy.
That is insane. So how much did your company grow from day one to the day you decided you needed better internet?
Well, we, from the beginning, I would say we doubled about every year, and moving into internet definitely, made a huge difference. And then, that
was
2018.
From year 4 to 5, what was that? What did that growth look like?
So I would say,
quadrupled.
No, we doubled, but it was like, you know,
a bigger double. Yeah.
A big, you know, every double is bigger.
Yeah.
So I would say, I'm trying to remember exactly, but probably from about like 250,000 to like 500,000, you know, like that was a big step. Mm-hmm. Then our other big double, we had moved into internet, which was really great. And we'd moved into a bigger warehouse, and then COVID hit. And we were ready. You know, we were already we were shipping to people's doors. We already had the shipping worked out. We've been doing this. And that was another big doubling that was just, actually, we quadrupled overnight. It was just like.
Question, is the warehouse in Alaska or is it in Washington?
It's in Washington. So I did skip a step. So the same year that we moved into internet.
21st century.
Out of the mountains. We also, so we'd been fishing and we've been getting our fish cut by this small fishing processor. They were small. Everybody else is the big guys, right? The Tridents and the people shipping to Costco, but we have this small plant cutting our fish. And that's a huge part of what people like us are doing. Nobody wants to deal with, okay, I'm cutting your fish and giving it back to you. I'm packaging it into 6 ounce portions. They don't want to deal with it. But we had this little plant that was doing it. And then about 4 years in, they said, hey, we're going to sell. And they came to us, which was, we were just these small little direct marketers, but we were doing enough fish that they were like, hey, we see that you're doing something because we see how much fish you're moving. Do you want to buy this plant? And we were like, what? We're just fishermen and these direct marketers. But we really thought about it. And it was, you know, if we didn't buy it, probably the one of the big operations, we have three or four big operations in town, they would have bought it just to
put you down,
just to monopolize, just to have, so nobody else does. And this is where all the community cuts their fish. We do a lot of subsistence stuff for the locals. You know, you need a small facility. And so Rich went to work that winter, found 10 investors, and we bought it.
Awesome.
And so now we still fish. We also open buy from fishermen that we know and trust. And then we have the processing facility that we run and process our own fish. We can create, do however we want, and nobody can do that. And then we have the warehouse down in Washington. So Rich gets it all fished and cut and in 6 ounce packages. And then he sends it to me in Washington. I have a warehouse. It's just a big freezer. And we aren't doing anything down here, but counting it out, and we're putting it into small boxes to ship overnight to people's door.
Gotcha. So let me see if I got this straight, because again, I'm so intrigued. You have no idea. So here we are. We're going. We're
He's
fishing.
For hire.
We're fishing on the boat, and we gotta. And then, do we clean them and freeze them there, or do we put them in the live well?
So there's several types of fish, but up there we're right on the salmon grounds. We're right on the Copper River grounds. Right. So these boats live in the harbor and they go out to fish and they come back that night with their fresh fish.
Unload.
And so we have a dock operation so we can load them right off the dock, and then we put them in totes. We take them straight into the, to the plant, and then we head and gut and then portion and freeze immediately. So this is what they're talking about with this frozen at peak of freshness. All of that is they're caught and then they're cut and frozen. And then individually, we actually wrap with parchment paper so they don't touch plastic. We individually freeze at 6 ounce and put it in our commercial freezer. So it's all about that really good freezing.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, we have this fully packaged, cut, frozen. It's actually sushi quality now because it's been frozen for proper time and temp. People get that wrong. They think it should be fresh, but now we have this sushi quality frozen, and that's what we ship down to Washington. So in Washington, it's just a freezer and a packing line. People walk in, they go, it doesn't even smell like fish. It's like, no, it's
all frozen.
Yeah.
So the key to this thing is the technique that the Norwegian ancestry taught you guys how to do. When that fish comes off the line, Rich gives a nice massage, gets it all squared away. So we unload it. The fish is real happy. And then we do our processing. So it's not a traumatic process, if you will.
Right.
Now, all this fish that you guys catch at the beginning, he's still going in boatload after boatload, but you guys aren't using it all. So you're just putting in the general population to sell. And then now, you guys have got such success with your warehouse and selling these things. You're not only getting your boats, but you're buying from other folks that you know that are doing it the same way, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
So it's the same fish out there. Yeah, same fish. I catch it, somebody else catches it, but somehow when it gets to your warehouse, it's going to taste better than that guy's because they're not.
Well, it's all about time temperature. Okay. So when you're talking fish, it's time temperature. That fish comes up over the rail and the clock starts ticking. And this time temperature is the biggest deal. So, you know, you've got to get it to its time temperature till you get in the freezer and then it stops. So from over the rail to in the freezer. And this is the fallacy of people going, oh, I want fresh fish. I want to go to my grocery store and get fresh fish. Well, that means nobody stopped the clock. the time temperature is going. So our fish is pulled up over the rail. It needs to be handled properly and the temperature reduced right away. So we have bleed boxes, we have water, we have RSV. So we're getting it on ice immediately. So cooling that fish immediately on board the boat. And then at the plant, processing it very quickly, getting it to the freezer. So we're just taking that time temperature window and just at the grocery store, you're at 10, 14 days. We're going, okay, it's just hours. And then we've got it in the freezer.
Is this like a proprietary process that you have that nobody else uses, or you just figured out on your own? Or is this, I mean, obviously you're protecting
it. She has a master's degree in this.
But I'm asking, is like, is there anybody else doing it this way, or did you guys crack the code and you got the secret sauce?
I would say anybody could do it really well like we do if they cared enough and just did it. If they had top quality as their top priority, then they can do it. But what helps us is our small plant and that we're committed to doing it right. But the time temperature and the steps that give you the premium quality aren't top secret. It's just
whether
doing
or not they
all
apply
of them.
It, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and doing every step.
Whether or not they apply.
Right. I'm going to buy some fish here as soon as I get off this call.
I know. I'm like, gonna get it shipped directly. My kids love salmon, yeah. So this is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go back. So you're in with the no internet phase. How many employees do you have at that point?
So at that point, it's just me. Rich is gone fishing and he'll send the fish down. And I mean, I'm going to the airport and picking it up. I'm taking it in. I'm doing the internet stuff. And then I have a guy that maybe we ship on Mondays. That's when we get the dry ice and we get stuff out. And so at that time, I have a warehouse guy that's coming in on Mondays.
Then walk me through that. So you're doubling every year, right? And you're making some big doubles. What does that mean in terms of people?
So down here, we have actually, okay, I will say everybody out there, hire before I did. Right about the time we quadrupled with COVID would have been a great time to be hiring. Of course, at that point, we were packing as a family. We couldn't hire. Mm-hmm. It was COVID. So we had, when we doubled our warehouse space. We have a big warehouse and a big freezer, and my warehouse guy comes, you know, he's like 3 days a week, but down here, this operation is very lean. We have a guy that drives a little bit and we have a packer. I'm just starting to get help with social media and, doing some, you know, more online, but it's been a bit of a kind of a one woman show down here. Cool. And then Rich has about 25 guys seasonally up in Alaska that at the processing facility.
And has your dad been able to watch this progression and what you've been able to build?
Oh, yeah. He really loves it. He went to UW and has a degree in communications. And I think that and then he was always a fisherman. And so I think he always felt like, oh, I didn't use that degree. And I think that watching this process, watching us do it totally differently, he's been really involved. A big part of what I do is I write these email newsletters, and they're very, very personal, very story-based. And it's really about our journey and about us. And he gets a real kick out of that, and he proofreads them. I'd send it out, and then he'd be like, "Oh, this or that, you know, you misspelled Gale or something." And I'm like, "Okay, well, if you're gonna do that, then you can do that for me before I send it." But he's gotten a real kick out of it.
And how about your mom and her nutritional store? Has she been able to use what you're doing in there?
She sold that a long time ago, but she, I would say just even her cooking style is so much. When we get together for family stuff and I come in, and now when we get together, it's like I come in, I'm going to bring a bunch of fish. I'm going to cook it all up, you know, because that's what I do. But our cooking style is still so much the same that I'm like, I'm doing this and bringing this. Don't buy that, because I know she'll just have all the same stuff. So it's super fun to get together and just cook together, you know.
And how old are your kids now?
Okay, well, the website, they look really small because they are those pictures are so cute and I cannot bear to take them off. And on the website, they're like probably 3, 6, and 9. And right now they are 12, 15, and 18. And so it's a different look and I know I should switch it out.
Are you putting them to work in the family business, I assume?
Yes, they have cool. A lot of experience. They go up on the boat every summer. When we could go longer when they were small, but now they have so many sports and so many things. We go at least 2 weeks on the boat, and it's a very small boat. This is salmon boats are small, built for two guys, but they have their jobs on board. Our son is 18, so he's fished on our boat and other people's boats, so he could fish. And then our middle daughter, she's taken the food science route. She loves to cook. And she right away, we said, well, everybody has a job on a boat, you know, and she said, I'll be the cook. So from like age 9, she said, well, okay, you got to at least learn how to do pancakes or something. So she's been cooking. And so that's her thing. She cooks. And then we have our little redhead she goes out on deck with dad and on a salmon boat, you can drive the boat from on the open deck and be up on the bow and, you know, the spray. And she's the one that's out there with dad going, oh yeah, she loves it.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
So when you're doing this thing, it sounds like, you know, most people, when they have to scale their business, they have to just, you know, do crazy amounts of things to make that happen with people and things. You didn't really have to do that. You just kind of, I mean, you worked harder, but you didn't add 1,000 people and 12 distribution centers and add a bunch of people. You just were able to keep what you were doing and just kind of scale out. Well, how big are you going to get, or how big do you want to get before you've got to go to that next stair step and bring in a bunch of people and grow the business? Are you planning on doing that, or you just want to kind of maintain where you're at?
Well, that might be where Rich and I differ a little bit, but I am very logistics minded. So that's probably why, our next growth goals are like, well, we'll have efficiencies here and we'll have efficiencies here. So, you know, we could double again and with probably very similar look and people, and just gain some efficiencies with our shipments and things like that. But, I am very careful because I don't really want to run a business. My husband he's got 25 guys. That's one of his favorite parts. He likes managing people. And I don't really love that part.
I hate people.
I mean, she did live in the mountains with no internet.
I get it. You're speaking to the choir.
I actually don't mind that.
Yeah. And I think it's just being honest with yourself. We did do, I skipped, there's a part where we grew with farmers market. So we were doing up to 12 farmers markets a week. And then during COVID, we stopped all of that and then our online quadrupled. And I was grateful because running 12 farmers markets, we did have people doing that. And that's a lot of management and that's hard, hard work. And we did put our time in at the farmers markets ourselves a lot. So not doing that, we do the one now that's local and we have, and Brett does that for us, but it's, I really like keeping it the size that's pretty manageable and efficient. And so I'm not after exponential growth. I'm after really efficient growth. And I would say we'll probably stay fairly lean down here. Now you talk to my husband and he distribution centers, multi this, multi that, across the country. He's a little more interested in that.
Well, you know, once the kids
that might be your daughter's thing, yeah. You know, she might be the one who takes that over somewhere.
I mean, honestly, once your kids get up and out, I mean, what are you going to do with all your time?
Right.
And so and that's what's cool. So the cool thing about this is that you don't have to grow a massive company to be successful. What you do, you just got to enjoy it and know what that looks like. And you've had a lot of, again, those quiet nights alone by yourself thinking with no internet, I think you get a lot of introspect.
Well, that's when she had the internet was
at
night.
No. Well, maybe that's the case. But yeah, you get to really figure out who you are and what you want. So all your listeners out there, like, find some quiet time. It really will probably come to you at that point. I've got this a crazy question here because it says I'm supposed to ask this question. But like, Copper River salmon, why?
Oh, why is it so special? Yes. Why is it the best fish on the planet?
Yeah, I thought.
But isn't there a time frame on that too? Walleye. Like, there's like, I don't know. These are rumors I hear because I've never been to Alaska. But isn't there like a time frame where that's it only happens in this time frame.
Yeah. So that's, it's one thing that makes it so special. So Copper River, so salmon always, you catch it when it's, so salmon lives in the river, it goes out to the ocean and then it comes back. And so you catch it when it comes back. So we're at the mouth of the river. We're not in the river, but we're in the ocean as the salmon's returning. So you catch it when it returns. You could go out there right now. You're not going to catch anything, but every species of salmon, it comes back to its own river. So it's Copper River is a species. It's because they return to that river. So for one thing, the Copper River is totally pristine. No deforestation, no mining, no nothing. I mean, you wouldn't believe it out there, but it's very cold. It's very rugged, very fierce. And so one theory is that these fish, they put on more omega-3s. So they have higher omega-3s for this journey back for their spawn. But overall, the Copper River salmon have more omega-3s. And on fish, it's kind of like beef, you know, the higher the fat content, kind of the better the quality. Mm-hmm. But in fish, it's great because the higher the fat content, the better the quality, the better it tastes, and the better it is for you. So we got that on our side too, which is really nice. And so it's that high fat content. And when you see the color, you'll get some and you'll see the color. And it is bright red. We have people all the time on social going, well, that's Photoshopped. It's like, well, then you haven't had wild Alaskan sockeye because it is bright red. And so it's got that gorgeous color, the high omega-3s. And then it happens to be, commercially speaking, so there might be some small rivers that they might spawn first, like way up in the Yukon or something like that. But commercially speaking, like big enough to come down and sell at the grocery store, Copper River is the first species to go, to return. And so now there's farmed fish, right? That is sort of like, I don't know, sort of available all year, which I don't trust that. But if you're talking wild salmon, there's literally no wild salmon all winter long. So you've eaten frozen or kind of refreshed at the grocery store, but that's also the big deal. It's the first big commercial run of the springtime. And so the grocery stores, the people, everybody is just craving this wild salmon, and it's the first one. So it's a really big deal.
So when do we order that?
So it's, the run opens mid-May. We don't even know. They count fish as it comes. And so we don't fish until they get their million fish gone through. So it's science. It's very, very regulated for sustainability. I mean, on a daily basis. And so we don't fish until we'll find out the opener days before, but it's right around mid-May. And we start pre-selling it in early May because that's how popular it is.
Well, I've got to send an alarm on my phone.
Yeah. Right around May 1st, we start pre-selling. And then I've mentioned the sockeye, but the Copper River King, they run at the same time. So they're bigger fish. They're even fattier. They're thicker. The fat, the omega-3s is off the charts. It'd be like your Wagyu, you know. And it's one of these fish where it's like, if you've had it, then you just know. And if you've never had it, you really want to try it. And so at the same time, we're selling Copper River King. And Copper River King, we just don't know how much is going to be there. It's a much more limited quantities. So we pre-sell really carefully. And then as we catch, we sort of open up a little bit more. And I'm on the email, okay, I opened up a little bit more, you guys. Okay, jump on right now. There's a little bit more. But that's as we're catching, we're selling. And then we bring it down. The end of May, we do 2 weeks of fresh, which our whole business is around premium frozen. But during that 2 weeks of May, we're catching it so fast and sending it down so fast, we literally don't have time to freeze it.
I've got like 4,000 questions.
I'm like, we don't have enough time.
So the first question is, if you do your process and it gets frozen, how long does that fish last frozen where it still tastes good and still good for you? Is that like a 6 month, 3 month, a year, 2 years? How long does that last?
We say a year, and I feel really confident about that because we eat it all winter long. And so we eat it all winter. It's no problem. We freeze it to last a year. And then it's like magic right around when that fresh fish comes from the next season, you're like, yeah, pass.
So second question then is, so in Ohio, if we wanted the fresh one that comes in, we could get on the list maybe, and we could get fresh for a couple weeks.
We're getting
weeks,
on that list.
And then it goes back to frozen.
Yeah.
And from a taste standpoint, does the fresh, like here's the frozen and here's the fresh flavor, is it noticeable?
Our people listening can't hear you. So he's
doing an arm, like a chart here, like a ruler, six inches
above, 12 inches above.
Is a flavor that much better? The fresh versus the frozen?
I would say, we specialize in premium frozen. And so our frozen is probably pretty close to the fresh. Yeah. And the frozen is a little more convenient because you can get it, you can put it in your freezer, right. You can defrost it when you want. But it's still so appealing to get that fresh and just be like, there's no better.
Well, literally, that the season starts, we got fresh fish coming. This is, I mean, it's just like any hunting season, you get the first buck. I mean, you get, it's like, you look forward to the buzz. All right, so we
got
to get another
we've got the buzz going. You better get another boat out there after people listen to this.
I'm going.
But what if someone wanted it now? Do they just have to get on the list to get it? Like, I can't get the shipping out on Monday. I just have to get on the...
Because it's not ready yet.
So our Copper River sockeye... we try to freeze enough for the whole winter. So we really try to have Copper River sockeye. It's kind of our bread and butter. We try to have it year round. We have several species right now as we're getting in close to April, May is when we start selling out of species, selling out. And we're trying to manage that perfectly. We try to have it frozen all year until we have the next season available. I mean, that's tricky, but somehow we usually manage to manage each species right up until we have the fresh. Sometimes we sell out of the sockeye a little early, but that's, so we're selling the frozen. It's still great. It's still good. And then when the next season comes, it's like, oh my gosh, it blows the doors off because that's the deal.
We're going to have to try both the now and then in 6-8 weeks.
It's crazy to have a business where you're able to create this buzz where people just, they got to have it. Like, I need that, right? And that is the kind of the, I mean.
But it's her passion. Right. And I give you so much credit for that. Like, coming into this, I'm not really a salmon lover. I've, read, feed it to the kids, do all the things. But now I'm like, can we take a moment and I can get on the list right now, right? But like before this podcast ends. So your passion truly comes forth in what you're doing, how you're doing it. I love that it started, with your dad and how that started with, it's like the whole generation, the whole family. I don't think my kids care about what I go to work and do, right? Like they're just, mommy goes to work, right? And so you've been able to breed that passion generation to generation. And I mean, I'm going to make my kids listen to this podcast so that they can understand that. But I think we have a couple questions we have to ask because it's what we have to do. And unfortunately, we can't keep going down. We can't keep going down, our curiosity. So I think you've answered, we kind of understand where you stand with the team and growing and scaling. And I think efficiency is amazing. And I love that that's where your mind goes. But for our listeners, what is your superpower?
So my superpower is, I think of it as logistics. Like, I came in as the scientist that I'm doing the testing. And so I've always thought that it's the logistics on the shipping side. We have an algorithm that tells us how many, portions in the box and all of that, and that is a huge part of our success in keeping us very efficient. But I have to say that I am learning that perhaps I write my emails and explaining about fish, just like you just said, which was very moving. And I very much appreciate just being able to share our passion for fish it's been amazing to know that I have this story in me, because when we started, I didn't know, I didn't know how it would come out. I didn't know that I would write an email every week for 10 years and still not be running out of topics.
That's crazy.
Well, maybe the next is like salmon brownies. How do you get all of that together?
Salmon milkshakes. So, one thing you didn't mention that a lot of our guests do and a lot of entrepreneurs have is they have these peaks and valleys and things. And it seems like from just our conversation, you can correct us wrong, but you've just had a pretty steady floating along on the boat, doing what you do. You've not had any major things, at least you've shared yet, in this journey. Is that a true statement, or have you been through the schnizzle?
I think she's been through the schnizzle.
There always are peaks and valleys. I think that one of my things is I'm a stabilizer. So I'm the one home with the kids. Like, I'm the constant, right? I don't go. So I'm trying to stabilize all the time. But like COVID, I mean, quadrupling overnight, that was a peak. But I had to keep reminding myself, this is what success feels like, because it felt like a valley.
Yeah. That's funny you say that.
Yeah, it was a hard, good time. But, you know, so sometimes in business, it's hard because it doesn't feel, you know, success is hard work. It doesn't feel the same. So, but yes, and we do a subscription service, and that's a really big, this time of year right now in the winter, as we're selling out, is kind of a traditionally a slower time. But I really lean into our cycles are yearly. So we have a peak at the May, June, and then again in December when people buy gifts. And then we have a couple of slow times that I have just learned to just like, yeah, this is a slow time, and we're going to, you know, just kind of slide through it.
So it's, and I'm taking this, you know, take what I'm about to say with a grain of salt and either lean into it or be like, I have no, I can't relate to that. But it would feel like for your family, the business success has this peak in the summer and in December. But for your family, personal time, not business, you're able to kind of lean into that in the off business times, if that makes sense at all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure. So in July and early August, it's actually a slow time for our business just because there's fresh fish and fresh salmon available everywhere. So you'd think maybe July would be big because we have a ton of fish at the plant and we're just like, there's fish everywhere, but it's actually a little bit of a slow time. And that's when we go up to Alaska. And so, it's been awesome that I can leave and my Brett, my warehouse guy, is amazing. And he can kind of take care of it, mostly because it's like, okay, these numbers I can handle. And then we go up to Alaska and do our thing and just really enjoy ourselves. And so being able to enjoy ourselves when we can during those slow times is really nice. It's the Christmas peak is kind of like, yeah, that's tough. That's Christmas for us too.
Well, I think the only other thing we haven't talked about, and I'll leave it at this, but I think the next $1 billion business idea is like, idiots like me would love to go up there for 2 weeks and sit on a boat and figure out how to do this. I think
you have to have a whole job.
Right, but a whole ecotourism. I would do it. I would be the cook. I would do whatever. I just think that, you know, going to a dude ranch, like go to a fishing boat. If you're not doing that, that sounds like I would be sign up for that tomorrow.
I feel like the liability. Okay. My mind goes to the business aspect of that.
We're a life preserver. I mean, how bad can it be? I've got to wear that all-purpose suit that they wear, the survival suit, because it's deadliest catch. I don't want to die.
I have thought about that because we worked farmers markets, and every male between 18 and 80 tells me the same thing. And I've thought about it. And once we did a fundraiser and we gave one a trip away. And then it was like, oh my gosh, what have we done? Like, our boat is small. They got to live there. It's like being in bunk beds. There's no private space at all. You got to really like these people and be in very close quarters.
We'd have a whole separate boat for these people. We'd just give them the experience, but it's really not the real experience, right? Because you'll be getting in their way of everything. But I tell you what. Right.
We have one more question, and I'm sorry.
Oh, yes.
I know our time is coming to an end, but what is your end game?
Oh, that is a really good one. So, one idea is somebody comes in and offers to buy it all, and we just go like, awesome. That's just what we dream about sometimes, but mostly on the hard days. But I also have a vision of us just, sort of scaling back, or Rich and I, fishing together on the boat, you know, when the kids are gone, and sort of fishing as a semi-retirement. You can fish kind of slowly and carefully and just kind of doing that. Like if I was to scale way, way back, I would, we would probably find ourselves just on the boat, just doing the fishing, which, you know, I would love.
Well, what I love is that your true honest answer was there's no end game. You will continue to do something somehow with fishing, whether it's big or small. So I love that.
Well, great. Well, I tell you, Sean, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I'm thinking everybody that listens to this is going to be flocking to buy some stuff.
She's got to tell us how to get on the list.
Yeah, give us the plug of what we have to do to get on your company.
Yes. Yes. So go online, senasea.com, senasea.com. Check out what we have. I do recommend our subscription service because you're going to get, like if you do our salmon seasonal, then as soon as the Copper River hits, you'll get the fresh. You'll get the newest, latest frozen. And so jump on our website, see what we have, and definitely get on our email list. That's where I really share the passion, and that's where you're going to hear as soon as I open up the pre-sale, I tell the email list. So that's where you got the goods.
Well, awesome. You've been wonderful. I think our fans are going to love this one. So thank you very much, and wish you the best in the season coming up in, 6 weeks, 8 weeks maybe?
Yeah.
Game
coming
up. All right. Well, great seeing you. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
At Harper & Company CPA Plus, we just don't care about the numbers. We care about helping you tap into the greatness of your entrepreneurial journey. You deserve a partner who has helped hundreds of businesses go from paying the bills to building the business and lifestyle of their dreams. Go to our website and download our free guide entitled Entrepreneurial Success Formula, How to Avoid Managing Your Business from Your Bank Account. The link is in this episode's show notes.